You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. Finland's Data Protection Authority is investigating reports that Nokia 7 Plus smartphones are sending data to a Chinese telecom server. Thousands of API tokens and cryptographic keys are exposed in public GitHub repositories. The U.S. government warns that certain cardiac devices can be hacked from close range. A North Carolina county government is dealing with its third ransomware attack. The Chertoff Group's Adam Isles joins us with insights on supply chain risks and transportation. And Magecart groups go after betting companies. That'll keep you up at night. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Friday, March 22nd, 2019. Finland's Data Protection Authority is investigating a potential data breach violation following a report that some Nokia 7 Plus smartphones developed by HMD Global were transmitting sensitive data to a Chinese server. NRK reported yesterday that every time one of the phones was switched on or the screen was unlocked, it sent an unencrypted data packet containing the phone's geographical position, SIM card number, and serial number to a server belonging to China's state-owned telecommunications company. HMD Global, a Finnish company that develops Nokia-branded phones, said the issue was due to a glitch in the phone activation software, which was patched last month. The company says its phones erroneously included software meant for the Chinese market. This explanation would make sense because the Nokia 7 was a China-exclusive product before a newer version was released for the global market. Collecting data when a phone is first activated is a standard industry practice, as it allows telecom companies to activate the phone's warranty. It's also possible that the activity was required for Chinese phones in order to comply with local data collection laws. The report caused additional concern, however, since it came at a time of heightened apprehension about potentially backdoored Chinese technology. HMD's phones are manufactured by Foxconn in China, so some researchers believe the issue is worth looking into further. Finland's data protection ombudsman agrees, so he's ordered an investigation. He believes that this at least looks like a violation of GDPR. HMD holds that no personal information was transmitted, but that's going to be a hard sell if the phone sent location data without users' consent. It's worth noting that Nokia itself doesn't appear to be involved in this situation, although the phones still bear its name. The company sold its mobile phone business to Microsoft in 2014, and the business was taken over in 2016 by former Nokia executives at HMD. More than 100,000 GitHub repositories have exposed API tokens and cryptographic keys due to poor coding practices. Researchers from North Carolina State University scanned millions of public GitHub repositories looking for text strings that resembled tokens or keys and discovered more than 200,000 exposed keys spread across more than 100,000 projects. They see thousands of new keys appearing every day, 81% of which aren't removed within 2 weeks. Yesterday, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FDA warned that the Kinexus wireless telemetry protocol used in certain Medtronic cardiac devices can be hacked from up to 20 feet away. Two teams of security researchers discovered the vulnerability in 16 different models of Medtronic implantable defibrillators. The Kinexus protocol, which uses radio frequency to communicate between devices, doesn't implement encryption, authentication, or authorization. An attacker in close proximity could modify or inject data between the devices and their control units. The devices have some mitigations built in, and Medtronic is working to develop further safeguards. The company says the risk of physical harm to patients is low, since an attacker would have to be so close. The devices are also only vulnerable when they're in listen mode, which is deactivated throughout most of the day. The FDA urges patients to keep their monitors plugged in, saying that, quote, the benefits of remote wireless monitoring of an implantable device outweigh the practical risk of an unauthorized user exploiting these devices' vulnerabilities, end quote. The vulnerability does not extend to any pacemakers. Orange County, North Carolina is dealing with its third ransomware attack in 6 years. Orange County spokesman Todd McGee told a local CBS affiliate that the malware shut down systems in the sheriff's office, the register of deeds, and the local library, among others. Some systems have been restored, but the county doesn't know how long the full recovery will take. McGee said the attack was likely due to someone clicking on a malicious link, adding that it could have spread from the public computers at the library. Terrence Jackson, the CISO of Thycotic, told the Information Security Media Group that he wonders if the county paid the previous ransoms, encouraging additional attacks, or if the problem is simply poor cyber hygiene. Chris Morales from the threat detection firm Vectra believes the county was targeted because attackers know that local governments struggle to fund adequate security measures. And finally, RiskIQ revealed two MageCart attacks which compromised the websites of the pillow manufacturer MyPillow and the mattress company Amerisleep. In the case of MyPillow, attackers placed a skimmer by registering a domain and injecting it into the live chat script in MyPillow's website. The skimmer was placed in late October but hasn't been active since November 19th. Amerisleep was compromised by a long-running campaign from December 2016 to October 2017. 2 months ago, however, the attackers returned and injected skimmers into payment pages on Amerisleep's website. The domain used by these skimmers has since been taken offline, but Amerisleep's website is still compromised, and the company hasn't answered RiskIQ's attempts to inform them. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business.
And joining me once again is Malek Ben-Salem. She's the Senior R&D Manager for Security at Accenture Labs. Malek, it's great to have you back. We wanted to touch today on a presentation from Accenture about securing the digital economy. What do we need to know here?
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so this is a paper that we have recently published. It's based on a survey that we've conducted with a number of our clients. And we want to look at the fundamentals of the internet. We know, right, and businesses know that they're dependent on the digital economy and the internet for growth. But what we've been realizing and what a lot of CEOs have been realizing recently is that that growth is dependent on trust. We need to build trust with clients. So creating an online account today, purchasing from a website, downloading an app is more than an exchange of data and an exchange of goods or services. But really, it's an exchange or a transaction that is based on trust. But building that trust with the current state of the internet seems to be complex, and we're not sure whether that is feasible. So this is a study to see what can be done today by CEOs to improve, not only improve their security posture, but also improve digital economy as a whole for everybody.
Okay, so what are some of the details?
We know that without trust, the future of our digital economy is potentially at risk. The internet is unable to sustain the digital economy due to several reasons. Number one is its evolution. We know the internet started or evolved from a military asset where security considerations were based on preventing physical failures to an open infrastructure where security issues are more sophisticated. The existing internet protocols are not secure. So that's one factor. The other factor is this IoT effect. We expect, you know, probably 50 billion IoT devices on the internet. We do have an identity crisis. If you go back to 2006, an average person had to maintain 6 passwords, where today that average has gone up to 27 passwords. Regulations are changing. So, you know, the flow of data is changing based on that change in regulations. And the cost of insecurity, according to a study that Accenture has conducted, the cost actually over the next 5 years within the private sector may amount to a lost opportunity of $5.2 trillion in revenue opportunities that are lost because of this lost in trust in the digital economy. So something has to be done, and this is beyond just securing infrastructures, but rather something that businesses have to do across ecosystems.
And so what are the recommendations? What do you all propose?
So we do propose continuing the technology investments, what we call, you know, continuing to do the work underground. So that's the technology investments, securing the infrastructure, the plumbing underneath our digital economy. But also, more importantly, what we recommend to CEOs is focusing on governance. So joining forces with other companies to govern globally, creating an internet security code of ethical conduct for each industry, being proactive with standards, particularly with principle-based standards. You know, like trusted AI, explainable AI, ethically aligned design, promoting consumer control of digital identities, you know, taking privacy as a digital human right, and then committing to sharing information about cyber attacks across industries, across an ecosystem. That's from the governance side. But we also have recommendations about the business architecture. So obviously, CEOs need to prioritize security by design. They need to make sure that their line business leaders are accountable for security and that they protect the entire value chain. So we have recommendations related to technology investments. We've been, you know, doing that. We continue to make those recommendations. But we also have strong recommendations on adopting best practices and ethical conduct for each industry and around governance across business ecosystems.
All right. Well, it's an interesting paper. Certainly a lot of ground covered there. Again, what's the title if folks want to hunt it down?
Securing the Digital Economy, Reinventing the Internet for Trust.
All right. Malek Ben Salem, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
My guest today is Adam Iles. He's a principal at the Chertoff Group, where he helps clients evaluate their security risk management programs. Adam Iles previously served as Deputy Chief of Staff at the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. He joined us from the Chertoff Group's Washington, D.C. offices to discuss management of supply chain risk.
You need to take a risk-based approach, right? Not every supplier represents the same degree of risk, right? You know, if you're getting a training service, right, that's a different level of risk than, you know, someone that's managing your payment systems.
Right.
And so, you apply a risk-based approach and you apply resources to those areas of, you know, greatest criticality, you know, and or risk. I think we're certainly in a situation right now where we have a very disaggregated approach and, frankly, a very inefficient approach where you've got lots of resources being applied as against supply chain risk, but in a very decentralized onesie-twosie way. And that creates major issues both for efficiency and effectiveness. From an efficiency point of view, put yourself in the shoes of a vendor where, you know, you're selling essentially the same product, be it a service, you know, software, firmware, hardware, to multiple buyers. And it's like, oh my gosh, I've got to go through how many vendor risk assessment processes, you know, none of which asks entirely the same questions, none of which has the same, you know, audit process. There's a huge amount of inefficiency involved in going through onesie, twosie, you know, vendor risk assessment processes that cries out for simplification, right? That cries out for, you know, some level of global or industry sector basis consensus around, you know, what is a good risk-based, you know, kind of assessment process look like? You know, were we to move over time to a more standardized approach, at least across industry verticals, then you've got, you know, a real incentive on the part of vendors to say, look, if I meet this bar, if I make this investment bar, you know, it's not only going to kind of check the compliance box, but it may actually, you know, help me differentiate my my offering, particularly vis-a-vis, you know, the competitors that can't achieve whatever good looks like. So I think that there's both a challenge and an opportunity in trying to provide a kind of a more standardized process to understanding, addressing, and monitoring supply chain risk across sectors.
And are you seeing efforts in that direction?
Yes. And I think you kind of have to, take it on a kind of a sector by sector approach. I mean, the defense industrial base has dealt with this issue for really for decades, right? I mean, in other words, if you can't hack the Pentagon, hack the Pentagon suppliers, and, you'll achieve, somewhat the same effect. I mean, my career began at the Justice Department. You know, I started at DOJ in the criminal division 21 years ago. And, when I did in the late 1990s, a book called The Cuckoo's Egg was required reading. And The Cuckoo's Egg tells the story basically of an East German intelligence plot to, compromise computers at Lawrence Berkeley National Lab to steal, strategic defense initiative, Star Wars type secrets. And so carry forward to today, right? If you look at U.S. CERT alerts, what we're seeing is that same basic approach proliferating across sectors. So now we're moving beyond the defense industrial base to the electric utility subsector, the energy sector. And you have to look no further than, U.S. CERT alerts from spring of last year to talk about how Russia is essentially leveraging, I think, what are referred to as stepping stone, attacks to, move from a vendor, then into an actual utility. And so I think the opportunity, right, is at a sector to try to start to achieve some level of consensus on, what does good look like? And so by way of example, in the financial services sector, right, you've seen efforts to develop kind of model contracts, that would speak to, at least for the acquisition of software, what are the core, terms and conditions you'd want to see in contracts. And, you're also seeing, I think, kind of an additional class of third-party risk management vendors that are coming onto the market, that are offering kind of specialized tools that allow greater focus into, things like actual effectiveness and continuous monitoring. Those tools are being adopted kind of to varying degrees, from one sector to the other. So I think where this kind of comes together is in those places where sectors come together to address security risk, places like, the FSISAC, the Electric Subsector Coordinating Council, EEI, and other other sector organizations. I think at a general level, really, it's kind of a three legs of the stool approach. Right. Whatever we're dealing with, you start by assessing risk. Right. That's the first leg of the stool. Mm-hmm. You don't apply the same level of security to, each part of the supply chain. Right. You focus resources on where you have the greatest risk. The second leg of the stool is mitigation. Right. That is, OK, having done a risk assessment, what is that balance of preventive, detective, response and recovery oriented resources that most cost effectively actually buy down risk? The third leg of the stool, I think, is one where people often fall down. And that's what I refer to as risk monitoring. And by monitoring, I don't mean, do you have like a SOC that's constantly monitoring stuff? I'm talking about monitoring security systems and technology systems to ensure that they're operating as intended, which is to say, okay, I've put a defensive countermeasure in place. Is it actually operating the way I think it is? Because what we see over and over and over again, endpoint detection and response tool, intrusion detection system, DLP system that someone thought they had in place wasn't actually operating as intended. And mm-hmm. Equifax is a great example of that, right? Equifax actually had, outbound, DLP inspection in place. It just wasn't working. And right. In fact, when they figured out it was not working and they updated the certificate that was required to make it work, that's when they discovered that they may have been victimized by a breach.
That's Adam Iles from the Chertoff Group.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, Netskope. Netskope is a worldwide leader in SASE and Zero Trust. Its unified platform, Netskope One, provides optimized access and Zero Trust security for people, devices, and data anywhere they go, helping customers reduce risk, accelerate performance, and get unrivaled visibility into any cloud, web, and private application activity. To learn more about how Netskope helps customers be ready for anything on their SASE journey, visit netskope.com.